Bahujo nehe ya no No kana ni seze yo te Bahujo ne he ano hana he awane ne he ana he ne yo we Bahujo ne he ano hana he awane.
Good day, folks. This is Robert Itis, and we are WART 95.5. This is Plants and Their Friends, and we are taping from the Caboose on Main Street in downtown Marshall. And today, my guest is...
Christian Marr. Hi there.
Christian Marr. And we're going to be talking about...
the wonderful world of fungi and how they are friends with plants.
Yes. So this is, yes, we did one other talk on shiitakes.
Oh, yeah.
So that worked out really well. Mm. And that's up there. But now we're going to be talking about a number of new things.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And not... just zeroing in on why the mushroom community should be part of our daily dietary life.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that are very, very nutritious and medicinal should be added consistently into our new diet as we move away from the cows and milk and cheese and the gluten things that are out there, and we're adding more mushrooms and nuts and berries into our life. Those are part of the new diet coming up, and of course I'd be remiss not to add herbs into our daily routine. Plus, we want to also instill in everyone the idea that you should be eating something wild each day.
Yes, very much so.
That's really important for your health now.
And also preferably local to your environment and the environment that you live in. That's, you know, exactly what you're a part of.
Exactly, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And, of course, in Asheville, I sometimes forget that because local is just so big.
It is. Yeah. We take it for granted around here because it's a good community.
Yeah. So I would like the audience to get to know you. You're traveling... from across the county line, and explain to the folks in Madison your background and how you got into mushrooms.
Okay, yeah, so I've been a science nerd my whole life. That's kind of thanks to my parents, and just really, you know, very attuned to the environment and nature around me. I think the moment that I really got first, you know, inoculated by the fungi. My biggest memory was eighth grade. We had to do a project in science about what a technology or field of science that we thought was going to be super influential as the in the direction our world was moving. And I stumbled upon mycoremediation, which is kind of working with the natural pathways and physiology that fungi express to help restore our environment and clean up different types of pollution, restore chemical balance. And this also is the very same, goes along the same lines of why fungi are so medicinal and nutritional for us. So I just kind of got really sucked into the incredible capabilities and possibilities of this kingdom of organisms, and also just really, really curious as to why it was a little bit more underground and maybe not, didn't have quite as much exposure as a lot of the other areas of science and nutrition that we are attuned to.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think the plants also feel that when mm-hmm. people talk about the animals so much.
Yes.
And they talk about the trees so much, but they don't talk about the plants.
Yeah, definitely.
Which are there. Well, this is great that we got you to come over from Buncombe.
Yes.
And right now you're a teacher?
Yes, I am. I've been working in a lot of the local schools around Buncombe County, doing various programs and also, you know, outside of the school programs as well, more hands-on, naturalist kind of focused programs.
Great. So. And so those people who might want to contact you.
Yes.
In a social media way?
Certainly.
So your contact information is?
Yes. I have a website that is omanita.com. That's AUMANITA.com. And you can also find me on Facebook. My name is Christian Marr, so you can look me up that way. And yeah, that's probably the most direct way to contact me. I've got lots of info out there for you to email or send me a message. Would love to chat.
Yeah, that's great, because this, we were just had another session on talking about biochar as being one of the ways to help out.
Yes.
But really, when you come down to it, the mushrooms and the plants and the conversations that are going on there are really, we're just hitting the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, yeah. We're barely scratching the surface right now. Yeah. There's so much potential. And I think, well, one of the fungi give a lot of metaphors and a lot of lessons. And I think one of them that is really important is that, like, working together, that community, and really myceliating ourselves as much as possible and working, you know, even fields that you might not have ever put together before, combining those efforts and finding new creative ways to restore yourself and your environment.
Yes, this is a wonderful place for people who are not totally convinced where they're going and what direction they're going in to get involved with this. We would encourage those people in school to do papers on this and really get deep into it. Now, there are what I call the five super mushrooms, which my company happens to have as a product, which is shiitake and maitake, reishi, turkey tail, and chaga. And those are areas where we're just starting to understand who these mushrooms are and how much benefit they can give us. There's so many studies now, like on reishi and brain, that and turkey tail and cancer. And so we're in some powerful areas, and these guys just pop up all over our forest, and we could let them just hang out, or we as human beings can take, for instance, the turkey tail. It needs alcohol. So does chaga. So does reishi.
Certainly.
They need humans to help make the medicine.
Yes. And they're so generous.
Yes.
They are just everywhere and waiting for you to use them.
Mm-hmm. So the importance of mushroom ID really yes. out there.
Yes.
We don't want to get into a place of confusion.
Certainly.
But these five are pretty well established that you, if you go for these and you forget everybody else, you're still doing great.
Yes.
And then you can come along one after another, maybe do an oyster, mm-hmm. something along those lines, and build up your mushroom vocabulary.
Certainly.
And then how that feels as you put it into your body.
And really, it does sometimes seem a little intimidating. There is a learning curve, but it's kind of this like exponential growth that happens. Once you start just really realizing the potential that's there, it's hard not to get really invested. And it's a very, you know, dynamic relationship. You are going to gain and grow and really connect a lot deeper by jumping in into this new world. Yeah.
Now we know that there's a lot of organic farmers in Madison County. And one of the things that we're just starting to learn about mm-hmm. is that relationship between the mushrooms and the plants.
Yes.
And how certain plants have certain mushrooms
mm-hmm.
and that you can't try and fool the
right.
plant or the mushroom mm-hmm. by putting it in the wrong place. Now, saying that, I want to tell you about an experience that I had. We were doing some blue oyster, mm-hmm. But we put them into oak.
Oh, okay.
And I found out, I don't know if you know Tad,
Trotter? Yeah, I know him very well.
Yeah.
He's actually a very strong mentor of mine, and I've worked
great,
with him on several
great.
Projects.
And then, of course, we have to remember his mentor.
Yes, of
course. Paul Stannis.
Of course.
And we want to give him some credit.
Credit where credit is due.
Yes,
and that's
yes.
that's kind of also something that I find in this field, like just how the knowledge is passed on. And it's really, you connect to your elders who have paved the way.
And yeah. so I was assured by him that putting the oyster in the oak was okay.
Yes.
But I had no idea when I did it that wasn't a silly mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So now my farm, Eagle Feather Organic Farm, has oyster mushroom in oak logs,
mm-hmm.
and we are selling those logs.
Nice.
So
awesome.
That's an opportunity if somebody would like to come by and start a mushroom.
Oh, yeah.
Understanding and
mm-hmm.
Great for a science project and all of the above.
Exactly. I think log culture is a great place to start because although there's, you know, not too much room for mistake, and sometimes it's a little slower producing at first, but then the log, since it's so much food in there, will produce for potentially years. So it's a really great way to start growing with this field. And actually we did at Art Space, I teach a science class, and we did a bunch of logs with the kiddos. It was so fun to do logs with the kids and just kind of imagine, they did reishi logs, so and just kind of imagine them over the next couple years as their brains develop, they're gonna have a little reishi log growing next to them.
yeah That's it. And you don't have to have it too far from your kitchen.
No,
that's
not
the
at
great
all.
Part about it. I look out my window and there the logs are, and I can tell some activities going on or not.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a new part of the living pattern that we're going to be developing
mm-hmm.
In this area. And hopefully we'll be as an example around the whole world.
Yes, definitely. And learning by example, that's, I think, one of the best ways to learn. And also in this field, I find, even though it has been maybe kind of neglected and been underground a little bit more historically, there's been this big resurgence of what I well, it's not my term, but what people have coined as citizen science. And that's an area that I am very passionate about as well, because there is just so much room for discovery right now and for just gaining data and learning about how these organisms work and how we can put them in combination with plants, etc. That, you know, people, just anyone, any individual can really produce some meaningful information that will change the history of this field.
It is exciting. For those people who are out there who are going, I just don't want to sit in an office for for 9 to 5, eating unhealthy foods and not getting enough exercise. It would be so much nicer to be outside with the plants and the mushrooms and
really
grow and pass these on to your community and your family. It should be part of our medicine chest and part of our food habit.
Yes, very much agreed on that. And there's so many ways to incorporate it into your diet as well. And also, you know, so many different flavors and culinary explorations that you can do with it. We are unfortunately underexposed to these flavors and the diversities of ways you can use them, because, you know, you usually only find like maybe button mushrooms in your grocery store, but they are very, very unique. So it's kind of, you know, a stigma to say I don't like mushrooms. That would be like saying I don't like fruit. There's so many different kinds.
Yes, absolutely. This is an opportunity to expand what you eat. It's not, you know, some of them like portobello becomes a whole main part of the meal, but usually mushrooms are add on and they just boost, all of the nutrients in there, as far as getting into your body. That is really critical. So we would encourage. Now, one thing that Alan Muscat, one of my brothers, kind of, he indicated to me early on that if you're going to take a wild mushroom, you better saute it for at least 5 minutes.
Oh, very important.
Very, very important. But the second thing that's really important is if you go out to harvest in the early morning before the bugs get on, you're going to have a rule of thumb is when you bring back something from the wild, it needs to be clean.
Yes.
You don't want to bring it in dirty.
Exactly.
So, you know, mushrooms, they use brushes. But one of the techniques that I've learned from Doug Elliott and Doug Elliott's wife and Todd Elliott is to take the mushroom and turn it over and hit it.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Really, really just constant hitting. And then you lift the mushroom up and you see all of the bugs are on your hand. Put it on your dungarees and now you have a clean mushroom. So there are all these little techniques that people get really freaked out about because they haven't done it. They don't know about it. And but it's not that hard.
It's not. And I would encourage you, if you even have the slightest curiosity, to reach out. There's a lot of really good online resources. That's another awesome thing about mycology is that there's a lot of community out there for it. So tons of Facebook groups and tons of mushroom hunting groups. Mushroom Observer is a great website, as well as iNaturalist is actually an app that you can get on your phone and it'll help you do identifications. But I would encourage you to try and connect as well to someone local in your area who has that experience and just go out in the field with them. And once you kind of, you know, do it in person, it's not that intimidating anymore. And then the reward is vastly worth it. So.
Well, let's talk about that community.
Yes.
Some of the really entertaining as well as deep people are mushroom people.
Agreed.
And we mentioned Alan Muscat. He's off the chart. If you've ever seen him do his rap on mushroom his mushroom suit, is as funny as it gets. And then we have Mateo Rao, who does mushroom walks and is very, very educated. Mm-hmm. Mark Williams does mushrooms. Ken Krause up near Boone. So we have, and Ken comes down to Hot Springs, a Sunnybank Inn for a weekend of mushroom foraging. There's no excuse, guys.
Really?
There's in this area, it's overwhelming.
It really is.
How many talented, educational people are out there talking about mushrooms. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that knowledge, there's no reason why you can't plug into these groups.
Yes, very much agreed. And we're in a temperate rainforest environment around here as well. So it's just absolutely ideal for the biodiversity and the productivity that you would want for foraging, for a foraging location. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things the mountains really excel in is the ability to hike and get mushrooms. Now, one of the things about taking plants, taking mushrooms, there's a difference.
That's a good
point. You want to talk about how we're just, you know, harvesting the flower.
Right.
We're not hurting anything. And and how important
spreading the spores. Yes, definitely. So when we're looking at the mushroom itself, that's only actually a small part of the organism. We call it the fruiting body. And this is what its main purpose is, to produce the spores. And that's, you know, how it propagates itself and continues its genetics. So underneath the ground, it's completely is where the main part of the organism is. It's the mycelium. And so when we're harvesting, we're not really, by taking the mushroom, we're not detrimenting the mycelium. We want to make sure that we do keep in mind, like, spreading the spores and how the life cycle itself works. So you can, the spores are really good at spreading themselves as well. But, you know, if you go out and cut a mushroom, because preferably you have a mushroom knife, you don't really want to dig too much up underneath it. It'll just be dirty, and that's not what you're shooting for. So you can, even just shaking the mushroom will distribute those spores extremely effectively. You know, in one single mushroom cap, there's potentially like millions of spores, which is really crazy to think about. But there's also, you know, in an area, you do want to respect the harvest. If there's, you know, really baby mushrooms there, you may as well leave them to reach their maturity and be able to distribute their spores. And then if you mark that spot down, keep it as one of your foraging spots, you can always go back to it and harvest after that maturity has been reached.
Yes.
So.
And they are consistent.
They are very consistent.
They are so consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we know a number of things now.
Yes.
And we are moving in that direction of understanding how much is out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the concept of food security.
Yes. Yes.
That just hits right on the bullet,
man,
of how the mushroom community can really help us out.
Seriously. And yeah, there's so much to this concept of food security and starting to work in fungi cultivation and propagation into every level of agriculture and lifestyle that you can. So one of my favorite things or lessons and metaphors that comes from fungi is about waste. And really, because fungi are the decomposers, that's their role in nature. And they are really good at breaking down all sorts of materials. And this can be used in so many ways to eliminate waste streams in agriculture. Myself and colleague Jesse Serrato are actually doing some pretty fun research on this same line of thought. But even, you know, for example, oysters. Oysters are a great way to get into cultivation because they're very, very vigorous and very eager to grow. And they will grow on plenty of agricultural waste, like anything from rice hulls to cotton, bagasse, any of even, you know, cocoa fiber. There's so much that you can even experiment on, even paper. They will grow on paper. So, there's this idea of turning what our concept of waste into something, changing that idea in our head into looking at it as material, something that could potentially be still productive and valuable and, you know, give us some nutrients from
it. Yeah, actually, all processes do not have waste.
Exactly.
It's just that we haven't come around to figuring out how to make that quote unquote waste into something useful.
Yes.
But there is no waste. And that's a industrial complex a concept that came out of the Industrial Revolution. Mm-hmm. And it also comes from a society that believes that there's always new stuff.
Yes.
You could just throw away the old stuff. And there's always going to be new stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
And then now it's not only do we have the new stuff, but we have the new technology and all this stuff. And it's really, it's a false concept.
It is. And it's going to be the result or the our demise, really, if we don't change that. Even another example that... So there's some so-called compost mushrooms like almond portobellos or bluets or bluefoot mushrooms, and they will actually grow on the waste from previous mushrooms. Like if you were cultivating oysters or shiitakes, then you can use that leftover substrate, is what we call it. The substrate is what the mushroom grows on, to cultivate even further mushrooms, compost mushrooms. So it's endless. Really?
Yes. Yes. And we are trying to really open up people's thoughts to these kinds of activities.
Yes.
That what we need to put into our life. It's a little less sitting in front of a television set watching somebody else entertain us versus going out into the wild. And when we say wild, let's be clear. Your backyard is wild.
Yes, yes.
The rooftop could be wild.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to expand some of our thought patterns onto what we're dealing with here.
And actually, a lot of mushrooms do prefer so-called disturbed areas. And that actually kind of induces them to fruit sometimes, is that are those areas that might not be the most pristine. But that's also something you do have to keep in mind. I will note when you are harvesting mushrooms that you need to be aware of what the surroundings are, because it is possible for the mushrooms to do a process that is called bioaccumulation, and they can suck toxins out of the ground and out of their environment, which is amazing, because we can use that ability for helping to restore our environments. But and you can do all sorts of projects. You know, there's even funding out there from local governments and stuff to try and clean up like brown sites or things like this. So you just kind of have to be aware of what's going on in that space when you're working with the mushrooms. Yeah, but even disturbed areas that are maybe like not in the middle of a city or something could be a great location for finding a lot of mushrooms.
Yeah, and so we just need to understand a little bit more about our environment, and we need to be more aware of what's out there. And when you take your walks, you need to maybe have a mushroom book.
Yes.
Well, boy, that would be interesting to get for your birthday a book of mushrooms so that you can go out and look at what's out there. Now, one of the things that hooked me, you know, because this is such a personal thing with mushrooms.
It is.
A golden cone mushroom.
I'm not sure if I know this common name. Golden cone.
They look like they're a cylinder. Like a flower sometimes have it. But they're bright orange yellow. And they come out in the fall. Late summer.
Chanterelles? Okay, yes. Chanterelles.
And so we went on a ginseng hunt 1 year, and we got up to the top of the ridge, and they were on both sides of the logging road, going up, going down. It was amazing, and they have come there every year. They're not necessarily at the same time. They sometimes come a little earlier, sometimes come a little late. But once they come in, I mean, a treat to me is chanterelles and eggs.
Oh, yum. Delicious.
For a week and a half or so of your life. And it's just great.
It is great. It is. And chanterelles are definitely one of those species that are super generous. They have a pretty good, well, at least in the past couple of years that I've been experiencing, they've had a pretty long season. So I've even seen reports of them coming out starting now, not so much in North Carolina, I think a little south of us, but starting right at the beginning of end of spring or early summer, and then they'll go through the fall. So they're very generous, and we're still exploring so many applications of them too. They're absolutely delicious. They're really like smooth and buttery and a little bit sweet. But I actually recently learned from someone from Mexico that they use chanterelles in a lot of skin products, and that they're really good for any like scar tissue or just healing that you need to do in your skin. Wow. So, yeah, it's just endless.
Yeah. Okay, well, we've come about halfway through. Want to remind everybody that this is Plants and Their Friends. This is Robert Itis. And I am here on WART 95.5, and my guest today is
Christian Marr.
And she's come all the way from Buncombe County to share some of her thoughts on mushrooms. I also would like to turn the conversation We've hit it a couple of times, but I really want to emphasize to those people who are out there who are looking for a field to look at for the health of the planet. We had a situation in Tennessee where a coal ash plant went out 30 acres. And I wrote to the EPA and said one of your choices, because they had different applications for people to come in and remove it or whatever, you know, decommission it. And one of the ways I thought that could happen would be through mushrooms.
Oh, yeah.
And they would not even listen to me. EPA would not even put that down as one of the possibilities,
you know,
to clear up that site.
Now, so crazy.
Granted, that was in 2009.
Yeah.
And we've had some real bad ones over here.
We have.
But I don't think that they've really changed their policies too much.
Not the EPA, but, you know, it's so interesting that you say that, because also we're dealing with similar situations here in North Carolina with Duke Energy. Their coal ash ponds are a big, big problem. And, yeah, there actually has been quite some significant research that I myself have been involved with a little bit on the process of biosorption, which is using these filters created by, you can use fungi, and you can also incorporate some bacteria and other microbes in there to pull out heavy metals and other types of compounds that are really toxic. It's extremely effective. It's a really, really effective mechanism. And these filters can be reused multiple times. And then once you're done with them, they compost into the ground. It's really crazy. Current techniques for that they're using for the coal ash remediation is using like this nasty plastic polymer resin that creates way more waste.
This is a wonderful place for some high school student to get into to do a paper on, or for somebody coming in college to look at this as actually a career.
Really,
there's only going to be more.
Yes.
Opportunities to do this, not less.
Mm-hmm. And you do see some really amazing companies out there that are starting up completely focused on these efforts, and they're really successful. I mean, Trad Cotter's business is one, Mushroom Mountain. There's a bunch of other ones out there. There's one out of California. I will think of its name in just a little bit. but there's some really good stuff. And even a lot of funding, and the mycology world, they know that since this field has been a little bit underground, that we need more hands on deck. So even in the academic side of things, there's a lot of effort to bring in those citizen scientists and et cetera. There's a really awesome project called the Mycoflora Project, which focuses specifically on bridging the academic world with the citizen science world for these type of projects. Again, my research partner, who I mentioned earlier, and I, Jesse Serrato is his name, we recently did get accepted to the Mycology Society Conference of America this summer, not associated with any university at all. And we are just, you know, independently presenting on some of this waste stream eliminating research. So,
yes, so important.
It is.
And if you want an occupation where you're going to get paid a nice salary for doing good work, this is it.
This is it.
You're working with the mushrooms, it's just, it can't get any better than that. outside, making sure that these things are taken care of, and researching and statistics and all of the kinds of scientific things that we need to do some of this.
Yes.
Now, we're going to take a couple of minutes to talk about specifically plants in relationship to mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And what is going on down there in communication?
Oh, gosh. It's so completely interwoven, and just, you know, so much information being passed back and forth between the mycelial network and the plant roots. And even, you know, there is some surface communication as well through bees and other insect vectors. And it's so... when you are looking at these relationships, it's kind of, we don't even properly have a way to fully describe the complex interactions. And this this area is really challenging a lot of what we see as scientific, like kind of things that we assume in science. You know, there's a lot of rule breaking that's happening between with the fungi and this whole world of just like chemical complexity and vast amounts of information going back and forth. When you look at the plant roots under a microscope, it's the majority of plants on this planet are forming what's called mycorrhizal relationships with the fungi. And so basically these mycelial strands are completely interwoven inside the plant cells. So they're basically, you look at organisms separately, but they're so dependent on each other and have grown together for so long throughout their entire evolution that you really couldn't have one without the other. So it challenges our concepts of what is a species, really. Even some of the most basic things, it's creating new ways that we view the environment.
Yes, and one of the first times that I got involved with this was in lady slipper rescues.
Oh, wow.
And lady slippers, both pink and yellow, grown under different trees, both have a relationship to the mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do not take your soil in large amounts out before they flower, you're not going to be able to transplant these plants.
Mm.
So they're very, very special.
They are.
And they really need that boost.
They do.
From the mushrooms to be healthy when they're moved. And it's a part of a lesson of how important the mushrooms and the plants working together.
Yeah, it's a beautiful relationship, and there's so many theories associated with it, especially when we're looking at like the origins of life and how life kind of came out of its aquatic stage even and onto land and started creating the biodiversity on land. A lot of scientists theorize that it wouldn't even be possible for that transition to happen were there not this very early on relationship forming between those, you know, photosynthetic cyanobacteria and the fungi-like species. This is very primitive, you know, this is billions of years ago. But just even at that very simple time, or well, not necessarily simple, but more primitive time on this planet, there was the need for these deep communal relationships to be established and for different organisms to assume roles where they are almost appears self-sacrificing at some points. And this is even challenging our concepts of what, what is mutualism, what is parasitism, etc., because a lot of times, you know, it seems like one organism is giving more, but to keep the survival of the other organism, it's like this altruistic behavior. It's intelligent almost. I mean, really, it is intelligent.
Yes. Sentient beings.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to understand that. We've mentioned this on this program a number of times. There's a book that's called The Secret Life of Plants.
Mm.
And that tells you how, at least with humans, plants communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can just take the next level into how mushrooms and plants communicate. And that's really significant. And it's trying to understand how this communication that humans are not aware of, because we've gotten so far away from nature,
yes,
that we're not being institutionalized to understand that this is really important.
Then,
if our survival is going to happen,
yep,
we're going to need to change a lot of patterns that we're doing.
Yes, and there is all of this interesting data when we're trying to study, ancient medicinal cultures and how that has evolved, and trying to gain knowledge from, native cultures that are still holding on to some of this knowledge. Many people who research ethnomycology, ethnobotany, etc., have asked the question to various elders, like, how do you know that this was the plant that was you were supposed to use? And the answer is that it told me.
Yes.
And there's nothing that beyond that that we are able to explain, you know, why that plant was chosen or why it was effective. It was pure communication.
Yeah. And it goes even further than that, because when we look at the Chinese, they'll put 20 plants together.
We look
at the Cherokee and they'll put 7 plants together.
That's so amazing.
How did they know to do that
if
the plants didn't tell them to do that?
Mm-hmm. And we're finding more and more evidence of that also with fungi. You know, if you guys have ever heard of Otzi, the Iceman, he's a really awesome mummy kind of preservation that we found. Well, he was basically frozen, and he was found with a plethora of different fungi species in his pack, and we are continuously finding more evidence like that just from very early on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. the importance of us doing these now scientific studies is critical for us moving forward. And a person in the future saying that they are a medicinal mushroom farmer is going to be a new aspect of an industry that hasn't even started yet.
Really? Yeah. I mean, that's the doctors of the future, right?
So now we're about 3/4 of the way through, and I would like to switch to another topic.
Okay, sounds great.
About mushrooms.
Woohoo.
So we've talked on this show about Ty Bollinger and the truth about cancer, those 9 episodes, and now they have 7 cities, Asian cities, in 7 days. And so they started in Japan, and when they got to the Philippines, and the Hong Kong, and then the Philippines, they found a mushroom that can cure cancer.
Do you know which species this is?
That I did. I wrote it down.
I will have to research.
Yeah, this is really important.
Oh,
it
goodness.
Grows no other place but the Philippines.
Oh, my goodness.
But to be able to take that into a farming scene and then into the body to kill not good cells, but just the cancer cells.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that something like that's out there. And now we're learning that this is the mushroom, along with, in that first series, they went to Latvia and they have a virus now that kills cancer.
Oh, my gosh.
So we are just starting to get into this place and how important it would be to be on the front of this, to open this up. Past the Philippines to the rest of the planet that is so sick and unhealthy.
Yes, definitely.
And of course, just curing and killing those stem cells and cystis. The cystis cells are easy to get. The cancer stem cells are the hard ones.
Mm.
But just getting that and not changing your lifestyle. Not changing what you put into your body or not changing, not having enough exercise or whatever that caused the cancer in the beginning is where we have to look. And the mushrooms give us that little window that we can look through and say, if this is possible, what else is possible out there?
Yes. Yeah, that's what they're so good at. What mushrooms are so good at is just, you know, really blasting open what our so-called, like, you know, barriers that we put around the way that we see, like, technology or science, just really making it clear that we don't really actually know anything, and there's so much discovery to happen. And, you know, if that mushroom that was found in one place in the Philippines, just this kingdom, the kingdom of fungi, is the most diverse kingdom, arguably. It's hard to actually measure that on the planet. You know, what is hiding out there in places that we haven't ever even really done a true scientific study of, or where there's, you know, not, it might be in an area of the world where that isn't really a priority or isn't too possible with the establishment that is there. Just creating this like motivation worldwide to see what our planet has to give to us. And just fungi are known as the alchemists of the planet, really. So they are the ones with the capabilities of creating these super complex, super unique compounds that we are not able to create ourselves. And this is, you know, like an area of medicine that has been around for so long, also referred to as like bioprospecting, and really where we get the idea for and the basis for a lot of our pharmaceutical compounds, because we are not able to do that type of chemistry. It's something that is well beyond our technology and comes from the pure brilliance of nature and Mother Earth.
We are on the beginning of a new era in mushrooms. Yes, there were people, medicine people, in all kinds of societies,
yes,
that knew and treated people with mushrooms. But it was a small part. Mm-hmm. The plants were the really big part of the healing process. Maybe the plants talk better to humans than the mushrooms do. We don't know. But for anybody out there to say, I'm bored, I don't know what to do, it's just not stimulating to me, I would say take a look at this field.
Yes,
this is up and coming. Ever since I heard Paul Stamets at a conference in San Francisco talk about mushroom, it changed my life. And I definitely incorporate mushrooms, and that five combo that I talked about, shiitake, maitake, reishi, turkey tail, and
what was the last one that you had mentioned? Chaga. Yes.
That is bringing back the immune system. That is helping those people who maybe are going through some of these procedures, which I don't necessarily recommend, but this would help them go through these procedures. There's so much help out there.
So much.
And we need to really understand how we can use it. We need to get the allopathic community to understand that mushrooms are medicinal, mushrooms are valuable, and mushrooms should be part of our diet. One concept that I had that I kind of threw me back was when I had been diagnosed with candida. Now, as candida is looked on by the allopathics, they look at it as fungi, that you don't want to put fungi into your system if you have a lot of fungi. However, that's saying that all fungi are the same. and that's where the big mistake is. There are areas where fungi can help fungi.
Very true. And candida are a yeast-like fungi, and they function very differently than a lot of the other species. But something that fungi do, when you do start to see these kind of imbalances that are happening especially involving fungi, it's usually trying to bring attention to something that is lacking in that system or something that is out of balance in that system. So it's not necessarily that the fungi themselves are the disease causers. It's they're responding to something that is going on there. And we see this, you know, in environmental contexts as well. You will see, you know, if you start to see like a infection, so-called infection in a forest, for example, with maybe like honey mushrooms, which are actually edible and pretty prized edibles, but they can function as parasites sometimes in the woods. A lot of times that'll be going in there and clearing out the trees that are, you know, not actually that are actually holding back the forest at, overall as a system. So it's usually trying to bring your attention to an area that needs your attention. So
yes. So we're coming down towards the end of the show. We want to just maybe recap a little bit and indicate how important mushrooms are.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so integral. And we actually, I think one of the things that really shows their importance is that we are actually incredibly closely related to them. Kingdom fungi and kingdom animalia are more related than kingdom animalia to any other type of organism. So they are really our ancestors and our allies.
And we need to know that not only do we need to use mushrooms in our diet, we need to use mushrooms for bringing back health, but we also need to understand that mushrooms can help us remediate our toxic world and also help us in some of those areas like cancer where a mushroom can actually kill a cancer cell. And these are places, each one of those is a whole world to discover and to form practices and businesses around.
Yes.
So that we have a healthier climate here.
Yes.
Both for us and for the environment.
Exactly. If you are willing to put that effort in and support the fungi, support the environment around you, then you will get way more back than you ever, ever dreamed of. It's very generous.
Okay. So this is Robert Itis, and I've been speaking to
Christian Marr.
And we've been talking about
fungi and their magic.
And we are on Plants and Their Friends, WART 95.5, and we wish you a good day.
Much love. Bahu jone he anohana he awane ne he one he awane. Bahu jone he anohana he awane ne he ana he ne yuwe. No kana nise ze yote, no kana nise ze yote, no kana nise ze yote. Bahu jone he anohana he awane ne he ana he ne yuwe. Bahu jone he anohana.